Welcome to the Dark Duck Podcast, your go-to place for the modern and legacy formats. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and joining me on the line soon will be Michael Mapson. He is a little delayed. We're still working out our schedule now that we've had some life work changes, so he will be joining us shortly for the modern portion, but I'm going to lead the discussion on the legacy portion. So join me. We're going to be starting off, I think, in Europe. We mentioned this at the last show that we had the European Legacy Masters last week, and you know, it seemed to be a big convergence of a lot of big names, big solid players in the Legacy community, and I definitely think that the results definitely back that up. We have a lot of, I want to say, solid deck lists. Nothing super crazy, nothing super out of ordinary, but there are some innovations here and there that I have seen and I've actually been really impressed with that solved a lot of problems that I've been having with certain decks or certain archetypes. And I think it's a really good place to start with the first place list. Shout out to Dario Moreno playing Blue-Black Scam. And you know, if you look at something like MTG Goldfish, they might call this Mardu Scam. Nope, not Mardu. Grixis, I guess. We do have mostly a blue and black deck. You see the, for Blue-Black Scam, you kind of expect to see the four copies of Grief. We're up to four copies of Troll, which have become slowly standard, I think. Some number of Troll of Karaz Doom, I believe it's called, and maybe some copies of Lore Revealed. Looks like Dario is playing one copy there. The things that we're seeing kind of variance on are the number of Dazes, number of Thorin's Ransom, and then, you know, kind of the you know, quote-unquote flex spots. Like, I think some number of Fatal Pushed, usually two, maybe three makes sense, one Snuff Out, but you maybe see that as a dismember. Snuff Out seems like it won out for Dario here. One copy of Shieldred's Edict, which has been really impressive for me. I think that card has continued just to overperform, especially on a format that I think is so dependent on interacting effectively. It's very impressive how much having something that, you know, you just sacrifice this. I don't need to worry about your power, your toughness, your converted mana cost, right? It's just a ubiquitous spell. I just ask you don't have a lot of creatures. And I think this deck is pretty good at dealing with kind of smaller threats here and there. So that card has been very impressive. Three copies of Thorin's Ransom, which I've liked. I think three is a very good number if you expect to play two throughout the game. Usually you can get the first one down, but the second one needs a Mystic Sanctuary to get back, or, you know, you need to ransom into the second one. So I like that. The places where this deck is a little different is the Stifles. I think that's an interesting idea. I'm used to Delver decks playing Stifle, and obviously Blue Deck Shadow at its heart is a, you know, kind of tempo you out type of strategy, obviously doing it a slightly different way than we're used to seeing. But two Stifles to go along with two Dazes, I think, gives you a kind of a good way to interact with your opponent while holding up one mana, right? Like, you have the option, obviously, to cycle your Troll. Maybe you're going to Brainstorm at a turn, or maybe you're going to Fatal Push. But now also you have to watch out for Stifle, and you just have to watch out just for, you know, I'm going to Brainstorm and I'm going to Daze or something like that. So there are a lot of different things going on here, and I think the Stifle plan really does work well into that. And the fact, too, is it's not something I'm used to seeing, right? And I look at a lot of deck lists, especially for Blue-Black Shadow now, and I'm not used to seeing Stifle in the main deck, so that is more than likely going to get me, at least the first time when I see it. And I think if you're expecting to get one person a game with Stifle, that's not the worst. In addition, too, you're looking at a metagame that still has a number of people playing Storm decks, so having a main deck answer to the Storm mechanic, I think, is a really huge benefit. And that's not even to mention Cascade, right? Like, Cascade is also a thing that we are definitely still interested in doing, at least on Magic Online. So having an answer to Cascade, period, I think is also a really interesting spot to be. So I do like this. I mentioned before this might be classified as Grixis if you look on MTG Goldfish, and that's because in the sideboard we do have one copy, only one copy, of Badlands, and we also have two copies of Meltdown. And I'm interested why it's Badlands and not Underground Sea. Like, if you're looking at the fetch lands, they all fetch for blue, so I would assume you'd want a blue land, but I guess if you kind of think about it too, everything taps for either blue or red. I mean, they do have the Scalding Tarn and four Polluted Delta. So, like, everything does also hit Badlands. I just feel like having access to blue mana seems a little bit more important. I guess the one benefit is that you do have more trolls, so the troll is able to fetch up the red source a little more reliably. So, I'm not sure if that's... I guess it's right, but I also am very interested in casting, you know, Ponder and things like that, being able to hold up Stifle potentially. So, I don't know. That's a debate there, but I think it definitely makes sense why you'd want Badlands over Volcanic Island. And you're splashing this red mana for Meltdown. So, it's actually really nice because the matchup where you're bringing in Meltdown aren't always the matchup where your opponent has Wastelands to punish you. So, it is kind of awkward in the situations where you're playing against, like, the Lands deck that we talked about a couple weeks ago. I don't necessarily want to bring in Meltdown there and depend on my non-basic to be able to, you know, get me out of that bad situation against a couple constructs. It is, I think, much better against something like 8-cast where they don't have access to, or I guess they don't play, they do have, but they're not playing Wastelands, so your Badlands a little bit more safe. I like that. Still do think there is some merit to just playing copies of Dressdown. I think even like Hurtle to Recall might make a little bit more sense, just so you're not in a situation where you need to depend on your Meltdown resolving. And also just it being so narrow. Like, I think there is a lot of merit to just having that instant speed wipe your board. And honestly, like, the number of times the One Ring has come down, I'm like, oh, can't get rid of that anyways, I think it's also very high. So, you know, maybe you don't necessarily need something like a Meltdown. But once again, I think it's another potential debate there. I definitely think there are some other options you could be doing if you are splashing for red, though. Once again, I'm a big sucker for my Is It Staticaster. I think that's a card that'd be very good in a matchup with opposing Orcish Bowmasters, just because you obviously have something that is not able to easily die being at 0/3, but also pink down opposing Bowmasters very easily. I think that might be interesting. Also, just good in, you know, things that were like Death and Taxes. I think that card has overperformed for me. So, but I don't think you necessarily need that kind of help. I actually don't even think you necessarily need the red splash. I do like Meltdown. I definitely feel like there are points in time where I'm like, man, I wish I had something just a little more dominating as an effect. But like, you also could just play like Energy Flux. Like, that's a card I think that people kind of underestimate as an artifact hate spell. But I think that could be something if you didn't want to splash for red. But I do like where this deck this is going. I like the Stifles. So I'm interested to see kind of where this goes. We also do have some other, obviously, people playing in the top eight here. Do have a copy of Jeskai Control. We do have a copy of Grixis Delver. Once again, relatively stocked there. We do have another Grixis Delver. Monoblack Storm. And this is another deck that I've just been really happy to see. Once again, this event, we did have the Woe being legal, which is weird to say. The Wilds of Eldraine. And the Monoblack deck, I think, was a deck that had a very interesting spot in the metagame, being a deck that is playing four copies of Dothi Voidwalker and four copies of Leyline of the Void in the main deck, puts you in a really good spot against these decks that are depending so much on the graveyard. I think things like Reanimator, I think things like Delver, Blue Black Scam, all of those are even dependent on the graveyard. Even things like the, you know, Creative Control or, you know, Orcish One More Time, whatever that deck is now called, that deck has definitely popped up in popularity. We saw Testacular have, I think, top eights in back-to-back weeks now with the deck. And I think that's a deck that will continue to be popular. There's just a lot of reasons to want to have good graveyard interaction. So this deck, I think, is interesting just from that perspective. Obviously, combining that with Helm of Obedience puts you in an auto-win situation. Karn does really good work for you as well. This deck is a little interesting, though, because we are combining a lot of different pieces, right? We do have, obviously, the Graveyard Annihilation Plan, but we also do have like Dark Ritual into Opposition Agent. We have a plenty of discard between the Thought Thesis and the Hymn to Torox, and you're also playing Ill-Gotten Gains, which is not a card I am accustomed to playing, but it's obviously super powerful when you get it off. For those who haven't seen Ill-Gotten Gains, 4 mana from Urza's Saga, remove Ill-Gotten Gains from the game, all players discard their hands, and then each player puts up to 3 cards from his or her graveyard into his or her land. I think when you start putting that into the average deck, it's fine, right? It gets everybody 3 cards. You know, you can empty your hand and get back up to 3. That's great. It gets really silly, though, when your opponent can't get anything back because of your Leyland of the Voids or your Dalthy Voidwalkers. This is kind of where I think this card ends up being really interesting, just as a way to refill your hand, and also just essentially just mind twist your opponent. I think that's a very powerful, potent combo, and I'm actually surprised I haven't seen that before. I think obviously having a 4-mana artifact or 4-mana sorcery is not something that is you want to fill your deck with, unless that 4-mana sorcery is a little bit more flexible. And, you know, this deck is actually another one I want to talk about because of the fact we're playing Beseech the Mirror here. Beseech the Mirror is a card that definitely has been getting a lot of hype. The card we talked about, I believe, last week, maybe 2 weeks, or I guess I didn't talk about it last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, with Ali. But Beseech the Mirror is, you know, some part tutor, some part cost reduction. You know, it costs 4, but being able to cast anything for 4 mana after tutoring it, I think makes a lot of decks like this that are, you know, filled with so many one ofs that much better. You know, for example, obviously you're playing a lot of copies of Dalthy Voidwalker, a lot of copies of Leyline, a lot of copies of Thoughtseize, a lot of copies of Dark Ritual, but like the more key pieces, the Helm of Obedience, the Shieldred, the Apocalypse, your Opposition Agents, your Karn the Great Creator, those are one ofs or two ofs in this deck. So the ability to have your Karn, which, you know, essentially gives you access to 4 copies of Chalice, you know, I guess all copies of the Chalice of the Void in your main deck. It gives you access to the second Helm of Obedience in your sideboard. I think being able to have the Beseech go get your Karn to then go get the Helm, being able to essentially go up to 5 copies of Karn and 6 copies of Opposition Agent, 5 copies of Shieldred, makes the deck just so much more consistent. So this is another addition that I've been super impressed by, and I think this deck has a lot of room to grow. I think Beseech the Mirror is just like one of those cards that, like, the more you play against it, you're gonna be like, oh, this is dumb. And I think you're probably right. Like, I think this card is very impressive. I'm not super shocked to see it being successful. I think it's just a matter of finding the right home for it. But a 4-mana tutor that actually casts a spell, as opposed to something like a Demonic Tutor, is probably not the best example, but Dark Partition, that, you know, costs 5, but kind of costs 2, but can still be countered, but then you still have to cast a spell. Like, that's a lot of hoops to jump through to get an effect that is essentially a Demonic Tutor, which is not bad, right? But Beseech is part tutor and ability to cast a spell. I think if you start looking at Karn through that mirror, right, Beseech the Mirror costs 4, so it's Demonic Tutor plus an extra 2 black to actually cast the spell. That's a pretty solid deal. I'm very happy to cast that spell. So I'm interested with this deck. I think this is a very interesting starting point for this deck. I'm excited to see where this goes from here. We also have Cradle Control, another copy of Jeskai. I do want to point out Tomas Vargas's deck, though, just because we do see a copy of Comet, which I always love to see. I mean, Comet is adorable. And I know we talked about this before, where I can't think of the name exactly, but they played a Jeskai deck and said the Comet was fine, not something they were willing to go back to the well on. But it seems like this seemed to be a better spot for it. I think any kind of control deck is probably better off having Fourth Earlingus as its kind of win con, but Comet does serve as some kind of card advantage engine. Obviously, there are situations we can get down the good old Narset Days Undoing combo, but, you know, without that in online, right, I think Comet ends up just being a better way to kind of grind value without being a blue card. So, you know, being able to dodge the Pyroblast of the world. So, I this is another deck, too. It's interesting to see Comet in people's decks. So, once again, very cool. And we also have a copy of like a four-color control list, you know, kind of the Anzi D special, which I'm always happy to see. The One Ring, it just continues to be a very good card. And go back to Tomas's list. Tomas is not playing it, which I think is kind of a statement in a lot of ways, right? Like, I think looking at the options, I'd rather play the One Ring than a singular Comet. You don't have to, I guess. There are definitely other ways to build this. And I think you're losing a lot of staying power when you're not playing Uro, right? Being able to gain some life back. Teferi does do a lot of work being able to bounce it back to your hand, but I do understand not wanting to get rid of it yourself. So I get, makes sense. All right, that is European Legacy Masters. Definitely want to talk about a couple lists from the challenges this weekend as well. We saw a couple decks that I'm not super shocked with, but a couple that we haven't gotten to really talk about just because of the timing of them and, you know, having guest on 2 weeks ago, being solo last week. One of them was Testacular, who had a great run. And obviously, Testacular is a great person. Ran into them twice, I think, in person, which is fantastic. Now, three times. Right, let me know. I'm pretty sure it's three times. But, you know, I think that playing this deck, I think, seems really solid. It's the Cradle Control, right, a la Hello Newton. We're seeing a lot of consistency with this deck. I think it's gotten to a point where the deck has not changed too much. And I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, just because Chrome Moxes seem to be the new thing adding a lot of power to this deck. It makes the deck considerably faster. This is actually something I would like to actually really get to talk to Newton about at some point. So maybe we'll try to see if he can be back on the show. Newton, come back on the show, please. But this is definitely a deck that has continued to just show how powerful playing just copies of Natural Order just to get a Crater Hoof in a normal deck, right? I think we spent so much time thinking Natural Order is just the top end for Elves decks, and now we're just kind of seeing, like, I can just kill you with, you know, Fiend Artisans. I can just knock you around with copies of Orcish Spellmaster, and I can, you know, take over the game like this, and, oh, by the way, here's an Atraxa. Oh, by the way, here's a Crater Hoof Behemoth. You're dead. This deck is really really powerful engine. It's really cool to see how this deck has developed. The Chromox technology seems really interesting, too, because I, you know, playing against it myself, I just, like, don't really want to interact with it. It just doesn't seem like something that is worth my time to bring in sideboard answers for. You know, I'm playing the Blue-Black Shadow list a lot right now, and, like, something like Brazen Bar is not really something I'm interested in trying to bring in anyways. Like, we've argued about this before, trying to bounce. Fiend Artisan does not feel good. You know, bouncing a Traxxer, Creative Behemoth saves you a turn, but, like, you're going to die anyways. I don't think I'm going to keep in that card, even though, obviously, bouncing a Chromox is fine. It's not good, right? You're paying two mana to get rid of their one mana, and they're getting rid of two cards, and you're taking five mana to maybe potentially play it. Brazen Bar down the line, but then it just dies to Orcish Bowmaster. It's just in a really awkward spot. So I'm usually cutting my copies of Brazen Bar, so Chromox just gets to do whatever it wants. Obviously, it does have some kind of awkward synergy with Collector Oof, but depending on what you're doing with the hand, either you can Chromox the Collector Oof, which I think is always funny, or you can, you know, just not play the Collector Oof. Like, there's other options. But I do like this deck. I think this deck is a really interesting place just to see how a deck can continue to evolve, you know, well after being established. So, really cool deck. And once again, congrats to Testacular. One of the other decks I do want to talk about, I think I'm going to get maps in on the line soon, is the Mono White Hammer. Believe it or not, it's just by Crusherbot. if you don't know Crusherbot is kind of like the innovator, I'll say, the mad scientist of hammer decks in Modern and also now in Legacy. I've been doing a lot of, I'd say a lot, but a number of leagues in Legacy playing this deck and having really, really solid success. So, really happy to see this deck. The Legacy version of Hammer Time is very familiar to what you're doing in Modern. Like, you still have Ghosted Paladins, Stoneforge Mystics, Ornithopters. The big difference is obviously an upgrade in removal spells. Swords of Plowshare is a hell of a drug, and, you know, happy to see that. Four copies of Mox Opal makes the deck a little bit more powerful and faster. But you also do have Retrofitter Foundry, so you do have like that ability just to put in a number of Thopters that can hold swords and whatnot. You can also just like build your own Metalcraft, right? Retrofitter Foundry being its own one creature, having a hammer and then making a token gives you Metalcraft for your Pure Steel Paladins. Which is super solid. You also have a lot more room in terms of the suite here for the spells you want to play in terms of equipment. So you do have Paradise Mantle, obviously the Colossus Hammers are a four of, but you know, Shadow Spear is consistent. The ones that I think are really cool are the Cranial Plating, Nettle Cyst, and Sword of Fire Knife. The Nettle Cyst just gets huge, and the Cranial Plating, I think, is a really easy way just to push through a bunch of damage. And because you have the Paradise Mantle and you have four copies of Silent Clearing, you actually can, with some amount of consistency, move around the Cranial Plating at instant speed, which also makes blocking that much harder for your opponent. The one thing I think that's really neat about this deck, obviously Ornithopter being a zero mana creature, holds a Retrofitter Foundry or a Colossus Hammer pretty well, right? You go to, like you do in Modern, play your Ornithopter on one, play Sigarda's Aid on one, and then turn two, go to combat, attack, and double hammer, take 20, gotcha nerd. That's obviously awesome. The other thing that I think is really nice about this deck in Legacy is that you do have the combination of Ornithopter into Retrofitter Foundry, and that allows you just to stack your Ornithopter and make a 4-4 construct. Which you can ask anybody is a huge play on turn one, dealing with a 4/4 creature. We were talking before about having, you know, that being a tempo deck playing lands. This is another one of those things where you play kind of built with this idea. It's like, okay, if I can keep everything off the board, I keep everything relatively small, my lightning bolts are going to be pretty effective. Having to deal with the zero mana 4/4 on turn one is definitely a difficult thing to deal with. And can end game pretty quickly and essentially have to divert so much attention to that the, you know, plan A of actually, you know, beating down with equipment, it comes online a little bit easier after your 4/4 eats up a lot of removal. And we see this combination in the Ninjas deck as well, where they're sacrificing Ornithopters, sacrificing the Tormented Soul, I believe it's called, the 1/1 Changeling. So this is a Legacy combination that we're used to, but I think it's really, really solid in this deck. So those are the decks that kind of stood out to me. I once again very happy seeing all the innovations happening in the format, and hopefully we see a little bit more coming up in the next couple weeks. If I had to choose a deck that I would play going forward, I think I'm still interested in playing Blue X Shadow. I think it's the best position deck right now and has a lot of ways to interact with people. We're seeing the flexibility of it still if you want to splash red. I do think there's other versions that you could play if you wanted to splash other colors as well. I don't think I have enough time to get into any kind of specific list or anything like that. But I do think there's enough value in you playing, you know, even something like splashing for white to get Swords to Plowshare. I think splashing for red, obviously, just to get that effect of Meltdown, I think is huge. But, you know, I think if you want to splash for green, I think having something like we saw Pernicious Deed out of another list, and I'm not sure if I can find that one, but you know, having Pernicious Deed in your deck that is planning on reanimating a 4-drop and a 6-drop, you can actually get some good value out of that popping that for one, as long as you're not playing Death Shadow. If you're playing Death Shadow, it is a little bit harder, obviously, but the blue-black scam, if you want to call it that, I think is a very good candidate for splashing green just for that kind of effect. So I do think there's some things that we could do there. We could still see. If you are interested in a deck that I think is really, really sweet, today's Tuesday, so I guess this was on Sunday, on the September 3rd challenge in 9th place, Alt Niccolo Ended up getting ninth place, which is obviously a fantastic finish. Playing a really cool Yorion Blink deck. We're playing some copies of Charming Prince and Gilded Drakes. We've got our Soul Hoarders, Teferis. Like, this deck is just fun. It's just really cool to see all the things you can do here. Not playing Kitten at all. I know that was a popular thing with these kind of Esper-type Blink decks. But, you know, I think just playing this combination of, like, Yorion, Charming Prince, Soul Herder, I think that's enough interaction that you don't need to go down the Kitten route and having to splash for, like, zero mana artifacts, things like that. The deck also has a land count of, you know, a Yorion deck, right, 30 cards. But the one thing I think that's really impressive with this deck is the four copies of Lorien Revealed. The card just continues to be an outstanding overperformer for me, regardless of what format I'm playing it in. And every time I see it, I want to cast it or I want to save it because it's so good. And I think the difference between this and Troll being 6 mana and this being 5 mana seems castable. I think we've all cast Yorion. We've all cast Force of Will. I cast Lorien Revealed. I'm going to estimate twice as much as I've cast Troll, even though I've seen Troll a lot more. Just 6 mana is a lot. Even at that point in the game, it's difficult ask to tap after that kind of card. So I'm really happy to see this deck doing well. I think this kind of toolbox package you get from Recruit of the Guard in the main deck is just huge. And honestly, I just want to live the dream and blink my Gilded Drake and steal another creature and then give it back and, you know, do that. So definitely a deck if you are looking for something a little bit more fun, but also obviously competitive. I think that's a great place to start. All right, I'm going to be back in a little bit. I'm going to get Maps in on the Horn, and we'll start part two of the show. So I'll see you in a little bit. And we're back. All right, so some behind-the-scenes things. We are going to kind of speed run this. I am here with Michael Mapson. How are you?
I'm okay. Kind of amused. So further behind the scenes, we have been recording supposedly for like 15 minutes, but one of us, I won't name names, but it's probably me, didn't hit the record button.
Yep. So just for time crunch reasons, we're just going to kind of talk through a couple of the events. We'll talk about the 20K RCQ that happened in SCG Columbus. We'll talk about Mapson's run through that tournament. And then if we have time, we'll try to talk about some other stuff, but yeah, no promises. So how was your event in Columbus?
My event was good. There was lots of good food, lots of good people, lots of nice opponents. Good time. Lots of Primeval Titans cast.
Cool. So you cast Amulet Titan. You played Amulet Titan, not Breach. I know that's the deck you've been talking about a lot.
Yep. Kind of off Breach at the moment. Who knows how long that'll last. Corey top aided one of the modern challenges with a new take on Breach this weekend, so we'll definitely be trying it out. But Amulet has been putting up a lot of results, and it's, you know, a deck that I'm just very comfortable with. I didn't have a lot of time to put in practice games. I feel like I'm in a really weird spot with Magic right now where I pay a lot of attention to what's happening, but just because of my, you know, my life schedule, I don't have a lot of time to actually get many games in anymore. Mm-hmm. I just thought this would be a good place for me. I was able to kind of copy Mistaken's deck list and sideboard guide. I made a slight tweak in that I cut the third Mycosynth Gardens for a Crumbling Vestige, which I have found very good. Oftentimes when you have a Dryad, you want to be able to turn on Valakuts, but if you get Boros Garrison and Slayer Stronghold, that puts you a land down. Well, I mean, you still go a land up, yeah, right? But like, if you get Crumbling Vestige and Slayer Stronghold, then you actually get, you know, your additional two lands in play. You use the trigger from ETB on Crumbling Vestige to make red, and then you tap it for white, and so it's just, it works a little bit cleaner. Like, you lose out on 2 damage, but if you get 3 damage out of it, then, you know, good trade off. You're plus a damage.
Yeah. I know, you know, we started talking about your event itself. You ended up in 31st place, so congratulations there. Top 32 is a pretty solid finish in an event this size. Was there anything you were seeing a lot of during the tournament?
Yeah. So, I should clarify. I would have actually finished higher, but I opted to draw with my last round opponent. No. We've interacted before. They're a nice guy. But we played for fun, and I pretty handily won. It's a very good matchup. But it wouldn't have gotten me any more money, so it wasn't worth it. Sure. As far as what I played against, I played 4 Rhinos players on day one.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so I split those matches 2-2. The matchup is, like, pretty close. Subtlety and Blood Moon are both very good against us. And unfortunately, Rhinos plays both of those cards. Mm-hmm. I also played against Yawgmoth twice. And so I got both of those matches. And then I played against 1 Hammer and 1 Burn. So I'll say I'm pretty happy with that matchup spread. Right? Like, I think the Rhinos matchup is pretty 50-50. And I think all of the others are favored, which lines up exactly with how my day went. Mm-hmm. So going into day 2, my back's kind of against the wall a little bit. I started off with a pretty brutal loss to 4-color Omnath in round 1. It was particularly painful because I think, 1, it's a pretty good matchup. 2, my opponent played very slow. And so game 1, I kind of mentioned, like, throughout the match, I mentioned a couple times we needed to pick up the pace. Mm-hmm. And game 1, they were ahead, but, like, they weren't closing it out. So I kept playing, even though, like, I was pretty behind for a while, because it was still possible I could win. Mm-hmm. The second it seemed impossible, I conceded. But game 2, I was, like, a lock to win if we had an additional 5 minutes. But we didn't, right? And if my opponent had picked up the pace, then I think I would have won game 2. So at least we ended in a draw, but instead I got a loss. Mm. The other thing worth noting there was, so the reason that I couldn't quite close it out was they cast the ring like 5 turns in a row.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was very frustrating. So I did think about the fact later, though. Sometimes Amulet has played fetch lands, and I've never been a huge believer. But I think in this one ring meta, it's probably right to play at least a singleton fetch land, because... But the issue was I couldn't kill him on my turn, but he was at 2 life. If I could just crack a fetch and get the Valakut trigger on his turn when he doesn't have ring protection, I think that would be really strong.
Okay.
So that's something I am looking at moving forward. So after 4-color, I also played 2 scam players, and I split that 1-1. And then I played against the Academy Manufacturer combo, which I got in 3. That was really sweet to see. And then I ended with my draw that I, you know, played in 1 versus Green-Red Titan Shift.
Okay. Yeah, I always loved the Academy Manufacturer combo. We played that up, I guess, put that on Twitter, not Twitter, YouTube, but it's a really sweet deck, so glad to see it. Had a decent run, at least. So if you are... Were you happy with the list overall? Is it anything you would change? I know you mentioned the addition of Fetchlands back to the list. Did you have anything that kind of stood out to you, something you'd want to change going forward?
Yeah, so, I mean, you've been to events with me, so you know I'm always thinking about this, like, afterwards. Mm-hmm. So a few things I would change were, I played Pajukabog in the main deck, and it was terrible, and I think Pajukabog can go. I still think you want it in the sideboard at least.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you don't need it in the main deck, so that's gone. That can very easily become Averted Catacombs.
Okay.
Past that, the main deck was pretty good. I know some people have been really high on Ottawar lately.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a reasonable inclusion. I could see cutting a few more lands if you wanted to play Explorers.
Okay.
I would lean towards the Mycosynth Gardens and Crumbling Vestige first, but I'm not sure. The list felt largely good in the main. Moving to the sideboard, I was underwhelmed by the Terra Sunders, but also if I had an event tomorrow, I would play them again.
Okay.
The Dragon Lord Jamoka, I was unimpressed with in the few games I played before the event, but also was kind of impressed by it in the event. Hydroid Crisis, I've always been underwhelmed by and continue to be underwhelmed by, so I think that would go bye-bye. There is a new card from Wilds of Eldraine that I'm blanking on the name of, but It's an adventure creature, and it's like one in a green for a sorcery speed naturalize. And then on the backside, it's a six mana for, like, I don't know, some big creature that doesn't really have great text on it. Mm-hmm. But I was very close to playing that card, and I think I would try it in the sideboard. Having a naturalize that you can Summoner's Pact for is pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's something we've done before. It hasn't been done in a while. But I think the fact that, like, after you cast it once, and you get to actually just make a threat off of it too, is pretty good. Even if the threat itself isn't great, I think in a lot of the matchups where you want naturalize, just having any big thing in play is good, right? Like against Scam, it doesn't necessarily need to be like, it doesn't need to be Titan. It needs to be something that can block a Fury. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Rhinos. It doesn't need to be Titan. You need to be able to block a 4/4. So I think that's something I would try moving forward. There was a copy of Amulet in the top 8 of the 5K on Sunday, and I know they played a copy, and I was jealous because I had been talking about playing it all weekend and just didn't. So I would fit that in. So yeah, minus Hydroid Crisis, minus probably one Terra Sunder, plus Naturalize Adventure, plus Duke of Bog, and then Frenin in the main.
Cool. Okay, I like that. All right, looking at the event, you know, there are a couple lists that I think kind of stand out, to me at least. The one, obviously, is the winner, Amin Abadi, with the blue-white hammer. Also, I think a dope cowboy hat, I think, in the winner's picture, which is cool. We've talked about this deck, too. I mean, I don't think it got anything new, but it's a deck that I feel like had a really good weekend overall. Between this and I talked about Crusherbot in the Legacy portion, you know, dominating in Legacy, but also having a good weekend in Modern as well. It just seems like the Hammer archetype right now seems to be in a pretty good spot. I'm not sure if you agree with that, though.
Yeah, I mean, it did pretty well over the weekend, and I'm sure there's a reason. I'm not super confident on what Hammer's matchup spread looks like. Mm-hmm. But I think it is a reasonable time to be playing it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of small things you're getting from being in the archetype. I think being able to being aggressive without having to worry too much about certain cards. I think the one that really comes to mind is Grief. I think Grief is obviously very good. It is awkward, though, because I feel like Hammer is questionable at times against Fury. But if you're going to be playing this deck and you've got copies of Surge of Salvation in the main deck, it does seem a little bit more bearable to have to deal with Fury and whatnot.
I think another thing that's going for it is with the prevalence of the One Ring, I think people have shifted on what their answer for artifacts is. Mm-hmm. So I think there's less Force of Vigors than you've historically seen. And obviously, that card is a beating against Hammer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, people are looking to get rid of it permanently or to shut it off. I've been seeing copies of, like, Pithy Needle and things like that, which I think, obviously, are really solid answers. You're seeing more copies of, like, March of Otherworldly Light, which I think is definitely an answer, right? It's not exactly where I'd want to start in terms of trying to remove things, but even, like, Cast Into the Fire, which I think versus Amulet in particular, probably, not Amulet, Hammer in particular, I think has at least double duty. Exiling an artifact is good, but at least it deals damage, so it can kind of get some things off the table. But it definitely is not nearly as impactful as a free double naturalize when you're not expecting it. That is definitely a deck I don't think I'm going to play it again anytime soon, but it is something to kind of keep on my radar. Just because I think the deck has been gotten a couple upgrades recently, obviously, between Surge of Salvation and Forge Anew. I think the deck just has a lot more legs than it did, you know, 2 months ago.
Yeah, definitely. I like when Hammer does well. I think that deck's sweet.
Yeah, I think it's, as far as aggro decks are concerned, I think it's probably the most, like, truly aggressive deck in Modern over the past year, so it's good to see something like that be successful. without having to resort to being some kind of like heavily veiled combo deck or something like that. Like, I think I've heard people call Yawgmoth the aggro deck. I'm like, well, that's not true. Like, don't lie to us here. I think Team or Rhinos is probably the most aggressive deck past that. And once again, I feel like that's kind of a stretch. Maybe Rakdos, if you want to call it that too. But they're not really aggro decks as much as they are, you know, mid range or control decks, depending on how they're built. So it is cool to see an actual aggro deck in the format.
I think I would call Rhinos aggro.
It's
like a tempo deck, actually.
Yeah. I think tempo deck is probably fair. And I think that deck, we actually, you know, looking at Ethan Dunn's list, who made top four, you know, we are seeing things like the subtleties are kind of just like a main deck fixture now, playing four copies here. But the Flame of Anor, I think, kind of cements it as another a really solid tempo position, right, where you have the flexibility of Flame of Anor, being able to either draw two cards, destroy an artifact, or deal five damage to a creature, which I think in this format, which, you know, you're able to deal with, you know, we talked about the Furies or the grief that you're getting back off of a Not Dead After All, something like that. Being able to deal five damage to a creature is big game here. But still, that combination of just like, ice your land, all on tap, we'll cast Shardless Agent, get 2/4/4s, 10 power on turn 3, go. It continues just to be pretty solid. And also, like, you had mentioned this over the weekend. I know you were looking for copies of Commandeer. That is a card that this deck actually is able to play just because the blue count is oddly high in this deck.
Yeah. Still don't know if it's good or not. At least it makes sense to me, but I haven't really witnessed it enough. But I mean, I guess like the main thing you're commandeering is the one ring. Mm-hmm. So going down on cards to then go up a bunch on cards kind of works fine.
Yeah. For those who don't remember, Commandeer, it is a five generic and double blue for an instant from Cold Snap. You may remove two blue cards in your hand from the game rather than play Commandeer's mana cost, which is, thank goodness, otherwise I don't think you'll ever see play. Gain control of target non-creature spell. You may choose new targets for it. So, like Mapsa mentioned, a lot of people are just using it to steal the One Ring. Getting that kind of card advantage engine back from your opponent is a pretty easy way to steal a game. I have seen people not in Modern, but I've seen people before like take it from people who are playing like a mono Dice Factory type deck, and they're like, oh, I'll take your card, and it's like, oh. But that is definitely a lot less often than it would be otherwise. That's like out of like Blue Tron or something like that. So this is definitely I think a pretty good place for it. I think this deck, you know, being a place where you can actually play the Furies, you can play the Force of Vigors, you can play the Commandeers and the Endurances, and somehow you still have enough cards for all of them to hit, I think is a really good spot for this deck to have an angle that other people are not able to kind of utilize right now. Also, was it Fade from History? That is a card I did not realize existed until like I was looking over this one. Fade from History, two generic and double green for a sorcery. Each player who controls an artifact or enchantment creates a 2/2 green bear creature token, then destroy all artifacts and enchantments. Love to see it.
That's a weird card to play.
It is. I agree. I guess the advantage for this deck, though, is that you have enough ways to deal two damage to things between like the fires and the deads and stuff like that. That's not a huge deal given the 2/2, but like you're still able to kill all the, you know, artifacts or something like that out of artifacts and enchantments, I guess, out of things like Hammer, which I think seems decent. I don't know. It seems like a card that you'd probably want to play in like Legacy to get rid of like 8 cast or something like that. I don't know what other high value targets you're seeing in the format you'd want to play that card for besides Hammer.
Yeah, I just don't think I'd play this card.
Fair. That's fair. All right. Any other decks you want to talk about before we get out of here?
Not particularly. I will say, so my opponent that I got in the last round was on, like, green-red scapeshift. And that's not a deck I've heard people talk about lately, but as I was thinking about it, I was like, that actually does seem, like, oddly well-positioned to me. That being said, you know, looking at it on MTG Melee, so, the last two people other than my opponent who played it, it did not work out so well for them. But to me, it makes a lot of sense on the surface. My opponent said, like, it felt pretty good for him all weekend. He also thought it was well-positioned. I mean, that's why he played it. And so that's something I'm kind of interested in moving forward. Just something to consider going into modern RCQ season.
I do want to note, though, before you, I guess your opponent's last three rounds were Dave Shields, Rodney Bedell, and then you, which is not a great way to finish out the event. So, you know, it could have been better had it not been, a GP winner. Did Dave Shields win a GP? Am I making that up? And then Rodney and you, I feel like it's not a bad way to follow up that. So, this deck, I think, is interesting, too. I think our friend Ian was playing this, something similar to this. Just another deck where, like, you know, you can power out the One Ring pretty quickly, which is pretty solid. I think it does top deck, I don't want to say ridiculously well, but decently. Just being able to, find a wish, top deck with One Ring and suddenly draw yourself back into the game. I think this deck has a lot going for it. I am always like, this is like one of those decks where I feel like Dwarf in Mine always, I'm like, oh cool, where's the Indomitable Creativity or whatever, and like there's no Indomitable Creativity. We're just playing Dwarf in Mine to get a 1/1 occasionally, which I think is peculiar, but
it makes a lot of sense. It like can block a Ragavan. Like sometimes you just need a blocker, like being able to block a Ragavan or something is pretty good. And you can't play Creativity, because if you just like Creativity for one and hit Sakura Tribe Elder, like why did you spend 4 mana on that,
Yeah, definitely. And not.
I was gonna say, even getting like the One Ring isn't as good as you want it to be because you miss your cash trigger.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, which that is definitely not the not so Raven. Not something I'm super interested in, so.
But like, he 2-0'd both of his scam opponents over the weekend. That's that's a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be something. So maybe this is the deck to try out then. I am definitely interested in decks that are being able to put up wind versus scam pretty effectively, so I know I'm looking into Murktide, I think, going forward for me playing Modern. But obviously, I'm more focused on playing Legacy right now, trying to get more games in before Eternal Weekend. But this is definitely an interesting place to start. All right, let's get out of here. Thank you for being here. Last week was kind of boring listening to me just talk for an hour. And the beginning of me talking.
I heard good feedback.
Oh, did you? Good.
Okay. I have not listened to it.
Of course, yeah.
but I have heard good feedback. I also have some negative feedback that I need to share off air.
Okay. Good.
Well, like, it's from somebody this weekend. It's constructive.
Okay. It's good.
So saying negative is like not maybe the best way to say it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I definitely the one thing that I heard was like, I wish if I was going to do a deep dive on one card, I wish it wasn't Delver Secrets, but it was, I don't know why, that was like one of those things when I started playing that the fact that Delver Secrets was able to take over, so many other solid one drops in the format, I mean, quote unquote solid at the time, obviously they're garbage in retrospect, I thought was fun story for me to tell at least, but yeah, definitely some other cards they could have done that would have been much cooler. Like, I think talking about, like, Wild Mongrel, for example, would have been a much cooler narrative. So maybe I'll go back and do that. But Cool. Yeah. If you are at home like the last episode, definitely let us know. You know, I think Dukes gave us some good advice on another topic that would be really cool to do. So if you have something else that we might be able to, you know, pop in and do once in a while, you know, let us know. It's always fun to try something different. All right. With that, we should get out of here. Mapson, where can people find you?
So you can find me at The Boring Places on Twitter/X.com at Expedition Map. You can find me on Blue Sky that I still haven't used. I don't know if things are actually going that way or if we've decided we're staying on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But if you want to find me there, I'm also at Expedition Map. And this weekend, you can find me as a part of the Green Suns Summit on the Dukes on Twitch channel. So you should definitely stop by. If not for my segment, you should stop by for our other people's. It's going to have lots of great guests. I would name them, but I'm scared that I might miss somebody because I don't have them pulled up right now.
Fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like really awkward if it's like I name everyone except for like one person and it's like, why does he hate me? But yeah, definitely tune in. They're all great. And then there's me. Where can people find you?
You can find me at, Bad Luck Bandit on Twitter. If you're interested in finding the show, we're at depth_podcast on Twitter as well. And once again, make sure you just check out Duke's stream. Obviously, he's a huge supporter of Magic. And if you want to check out big names such as Phil Gallagher, Pleasant Kenobi, XJ Cloud, It's Julian, Strass Daddy, Michael Mapson, and Goblin Lackey 1, definitely check out that stream. It'll be really cool, really fun show. So, cool. With that, I guess I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Given my attempts for green, the scene sees reclaimer. Untapped sack of flags, don't go seek the planes. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Doctor's podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in mock diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Setting the forest so dense it looks decomposed, with red luck every night's crush against death's shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow, underneath the surface lurks a lonely evil, an avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward going for the kill, but death's shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. Its stubborn denials compile a stack so thick, the bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't sneak forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept, the night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad Arbor's thaw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.